Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Debbie, and I am an alcoholic. Our faith tradition states that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Valley Group honors this tradition by rigorously searching for the finest recovery speakers in the Western Hemisphere so that they can share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Each week, we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group's Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of May 18, 2011. He has held service positions such as Secretary for Tukipa. That's it. He is also involved in putting on a poker run for that same... I'll get it right. Here's the most important service position he's held. He is a really good chair stacker.
Yeah!
That was the first service commitment, and he believes that to help him stay sober. And when I asked him what his favorite AA motto is, he said, "Forgiveness is giving up hope for a better yesterday." Forgiveness is a better hope for, is giving up hope for a better yesterday. That was pretty cool. Forgiveness is giving up, I'll let him say it. Okay, may I have the envelope, please?
We forgive you.
Thank you. Okay, we've been waiting for this all day. The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week is Greg T. from Visalia.
My name is Greg, and I'm an alcoholic. I live in Visalia, California, and I really appreciate this meeting. I spent my first 4 months of sobriety in the county jail over at MCF. And when I got out, I started running the meetings, and I happened upon this one, which is probably the second day I was out, and they were giving out shifts for every month of sobriety, and it really helped me on my way. Because every minute and every day and every month and every milestone just helps, you know. I half-assed recovery for a long time. I just came around. I've been getting court ordered to come to AA since I was 15. So it's almost 20 years now, and I would get length of sobriety, and I wouldn't pick up shifts, and it wouldn't do me any good, and I didn't do anything. I just came to meetings and thought it was groovy. I don't speak at a lot of meetings. I've never done a speaker meeting. After years of coming to meetings and being forced into these rooms, strategically placing myself behind someone bigger than me or diverting my eye contact at the right moment when the chair is looking for someone else to speak, I've managed to not get called on for years and years and years. So thanks, Bill, for getting me up here, and we'll see if we can do this, you know. My story starts off with some heavy drug use, and that escalated. And then when I was about 24, I found a cure for my drug addiction, and it was alcohol. You know, I didn't have to hide out and be a paranoid little scribble head anymore. I just drank, and I didn't give a fuck who knew, and I drank, and I drank, and I drank. And I'd never really gotten in a lot of trouble before. I was just destroying my body when I was younger, because I would ingest copious amounts of narcotics, you know. And then I started drinking, I started getting all this trouble, and I started going to jail a lot, and I lost the first wife when I was 19. I lost my second wife about 3 years ago, and it was all due to drinking. I say God bless the retread, you know. This program can work for anyone. I'm living proof. Through my years of beating myself up and torturing my family and just destroying any kind of trust or love that anyone put in me, I somehow made a custom-built hot rod of an alcoholic. You know, I'd hit the floor and I'd get up and keep going. I'd go to jail, I'd fall in a creek, break my arm, get hit by a car, I'd get out of the hospital and keep up and going, you know, and there was no stop. Everyone kept saying, you're going to hit a bottom, you're going to hit a bottom. And I hit bottom, I'd make a sandcastle. You know, it'd be all right. You know, there was never a lowest point for me. You know, by the time I was 24, I was toothless. I was pushing a shopping cart, living in Golden Gate Park. And I remember when I was a kid, my mom always wanted me to stay away from the weird people, you know? And there's always a weird guy on the bus. Talking to himself and just thinking. And as I got older, those people started disappearing, you know? And I was on the bus, and I was like, I just covered in my own piss, and my clothes were all stitched together. I have no teeth. I have a purple dreadlock mohawk. And I realized that my shoes are on the wrong feet, and I'm like, fuck, my shoes are on the wrong feet. And at that moment, I realized I was the weird guy on the bus. And that was a definitive moment in my life because I really just embraced it. I used to wear a compass on my wrist, so when people stared at me, I could pretend I was reading my watch. You know, it was my GPS system, like, how do I get to Oakland? I had headphones that weren't plugged into anything. And I'd be like, rocking out. And, I mean, it was these little things that would keep my sanity for a moment. Because getting completely sober and getting real with myself just wasn't an option for me. I was scared shitless. I was a scared kid for a long time, and I was a quiet kid. And then I grew up, and I realized I could get certain attention by being a little crazy, you know. And I fed on that, and I got my ego boosted from that. I got everything I needed from that. I got my wife, my women, my money, my everything by being weird, you know. I was a freeloader, couch surfer. You know, after the first wife left me, a buddy of mine who I graduated high school with, he had moved over to the coast, and he lived in Morro Bay, and he worked at Burgess Landing. And when he found out that my wife had left me, he asked if I wanted to come and go fishing. I said, yeah, I'll come go fishing. And I was there for about 8 years. There wasn't anything holding me back. I started working on the water. When the wintertime came, the tourists stopped coming, and so I got a job in the restaurants cutting fish, prep cooking, and I realized where people work who like to party. They work in restaurants. You know, the freezer, the walk-in freezer was a beautiful place. I mean, you walk in, there's all this smoke because the cold hits the hot air, but then there's smoke in it. And a lot of heavy drinkers are cooks, especially in Morro Bay. And then, I like earning money, and I'd open a restaurant in the morning and close another restaurant at night. And, you know, I'd hitchhike to work and walk home sometimes. And I lived in Cayucas at this point, so it was a good little walk. And I really didn't mind it, because I'd have a bottle in my bag and just, you know, whatever. Life didn't seem so bad. And, you know, a few years later, that's when I threw my shit in storage and just hit the street and was happy to grab a shopping cart. And I had a dog. I was doing good, you know, had a girl. I don't know how I had that. I thought it was okay for her to sell her ass for money or for booze or dope or whatever, you know, and that was just part of our lifestyle. And, you know, it's these things that I justified, you know, I justified my life. I made it okay. And I didn't realize I was lowering the bar on my life. I kind of just never felt like I had a bar. You know, my parents had a certain standard for me to live up to. My you know, society had a certain standard to live up to. And I realized I was alive. I mean, I'll just act however the fuck I wanted to act as long as I'm living, you know. And my standards just went down and down and down. And I started getting all these regrets and resentments against myself. And and things I didn't even realize were going on in my mind, you know, that fueled my energy to keep me going as the ultimate scumbag, because I thought that was great. You know, I thought I was a Hessian warrior for some reason. And I started hanging out with some train hoppers that were hopping in and out of Oakland, and there was other people that were just as scummy, as dirty as me, who didn't care where they landed, and it was a lifestyle, you know. I'd show up, I always made a point to go on my grandma's birthday, and I showed up to my grandma's birthday. She turned 84. You know, I got BIHOP going on. I got my girlfriend in tow, a big bag. Looked like scumbags. And my grandma's like, they're not staying here, are they? All worried about it. And it was things like that started cracking me a little bit, because I thought I'd show up and everyone would be happy to see me, and I started noticing these glances, you know, the worry on their face. My mom got a 1-800 number, so I'd call her. And I didn't think that weird at the time, but I started seeping in, you know. I managed to get back on my feet, so to say. You know, I bumbled back into San Luis Obispo and hooked up with a girl and started living with her. Things were okay until all these other issues started kicking on, because she was a little older at this point, and she knew where I'd been and wanted to try everything, and, you know, I blamed her, and I started drinking more because I couldn't take the paranoia anymore, and the alcohol really soothed my soul. It worked for me on so many levels. I didn't mind. I mean, San Luis Obispo, I don't know if you've ever been there. I don't know if you've ever been arrested there. You get arrested in San Luis Obispo, they're going to keep you until you go to court, even for a drunken public, and it's recovery, you know. But I didn't mind, because I'd go there for 5 days, I'd get out, and I'd go do it again, you know. I'd maybe get my backpack out of impound, which was always an itch, but I didn't really care, you know. It didn't bother me. There was one point, it was about August, and I hadn't been out of jail for more than 45 days. They never kept me for more than 2 months, but I hadn't been out of jail for more than 45 days. And I'm seeing these guys go up for alcohol-related offenses. You know, they're going to be gone for a while. They didn't realize the cop was the one who tackled them, and he hit him in the head with a mag light, and he was doing 8 years, you know. And I'm seeing all these people go in for their multiple DUIs, and by this point, I'd already had 2 DUIs. And I got worried that I was going to go up. And I talked my way out of jail one time when I went to court. He was going to give me 10 days, and I asked if I could go to my grandma's birthday again. And I had to hitchhike up there, and he let me out of jail. And I got out of jail, and I went and called my mom all happy. I'm like, Mom, they let me out. I'm going to grandma's birthday. Come pick me up, because you live in Visalia, and I live in San Luis, you know. And she's like, no, I'm not going to pick you up. So I went off, and I spare changed to get a bottle, and that got me pretty happy. And I started walking up towards the freeway, and met some people, went to their house and partied for a little bit, and then I took off, and I started hitchhiking and got dropped off in Atascadero, made it up to Berkeley, took the train over, and I beat them to the fucking birthday party. And I had to take the bus and everything, and I was just like, yeah! Woo! You know? And it was things like that kept me going, because every now and then something would work out. You know? I had a food stamp card. I got stuck in Antioch, and I went over to the grocery store and bought a can of olives and drank all the juice, because I was really thirsty, and ate all the olives, and then sat there and spare changed for the BART to take me off further into Antioch, and then I had to catch a bus line. I don't even know how I made it there. I think it was the compass. And I saw my brother up there at the birthday party. I hadn't seen him in a while. And at this point, I was really just tired. I went and stayed with him in the city, and we got trashed. I showed him all the different districts. Okay, if you want to buy this, go over here. You don't want to buy this, go over here. Because it's all divided. It's all very organized up there. And then he dropped me off in Visalia about 2 months later, and my parents went and dropped me off in San Luis with $20 in my pocket when the cops got me, you know, because this is hard. I was just going to figure out I'd hang out until I got arrested. So I'm drinking a box of wine with a bunch of hippies. And then I go around the corner, I see this little pink bicycle with streamers on. I'm like, whoa, pink bicycle, dude. And I jump on the bicycle, and I go around the corner, I try to bust a bunny hop, which I've never done in my life, but it sounded awesome, and I broke my collarbone. I hit the curb and broke my collarbone, and I'm like, oh my God, stupid hippie, go find someone with a truck, take me to the hospital, my collarbone is trashed. And he was kind enough to call an ambulance, which was a terrible idea, because once they got me over there, they're like, yeah, your collarbone's broken. You need to call someone to get out of here, because we can't do anything. And I was like, I don't have anyone to call. And they're like, we'll call someone for you. Don't worry about it. And they called the sheriff, and he came and picked me up, and he took me to jail, and I was like, I had one tooth hanging out. Dreadlock mohawk thing going on. I get to jail with a broken collarbone. I get dressed out. I go to my rack. 3 days later, I'm going to court. On the way to court, one of the guys is like, why are you wearing your suit backwards? And I was all, what? It was on backwards. And then I asked the deputy later, and he's like, dude, it was so hard putting that thing on you. I felt bad. I couldn't have you take it back off and put it back on. So there I am standing in front of the judge, who I was supposed to be back in like 3 days for. And it's 2 months later, and I'm like, hey. Grandma's party was awesome, you know? And he decided to put me in jail for 3 months, which was really cool, because by that point, I'd been in jail so many times that year, and I'd gone to see the dentist, and I didn't have enough time to have anything done, I had all my my x-rays done. He ripped all my teeth out. I had 15 teeth pulled out. I went in 1 week and had three. The next week I had three. The next week I had three. The following week I had four. Cool. And I was just a gummy, broken mess, laying on a two-man cell with a broken collarbone, and I was just beat up. And it was the worst I'd ever mangled myself. I've mangled myself a lot. I've got a double compound fracture in my right leg from when I was 15, slow motorcycle. And I got broken shit. I really did fall on a creek and almost break my arm. But this was like, I was just mangled and beat up and tired. And there was no one there. And I was just healing and thinking about shit. And I got this idea in my head. I was going to, you know, see if I can get back in the back room at my dad's house and fucking calm him for a while and maybe go to some meetings and try to feel better about it, you know, and get a job over here. And I never wanted to stay sober forever. I just wanted to figure out how to do it right, you know. And I didn't realize that so many other people were up to that same idea. And I found that out coming to these meetings and coming to these rooms and reading that book that was written by a bunch of cavemen in my eyes, you know, because I didn't read that book then, but, you know, I called my dad, I felt better, I got out, and I got some dentures from the county, and then I started fucking shit up around here. You know, I met a coke snorting wiener hopper down at the bars, She robbed my parents blind, stole my mom's iron from the 70s, and she still talks about it, and stole my nephew's video games, and I don't know, I blamed her for everything, you know, and I was just a drunken mess. I couldn't drink normally. I thought, you know, they were out of town, I thought I'd have some people over, have a few shots, go hit the bars, and everything turned to shit, you know, before I knew it. Everything turned to shit, and it was lasting shit that stays on you, you know, and I didn't know why, and so I'd patch myself up and maybe lick my wounds for a while and then do it again, and it would be just as bad. And during this time, I went to welding school over at COS, and I learned how to weld, and I was a drunk ass over there. And then I got this girl pregnant, and I wasn't taking that very well. It was impossible for me to drink at this point, but I kept doing it, and I was drinking all day long. And I would drink half pints all day long. I'd have a half pint with me all the time. I'd have several in my truck, just in case someone found them. That way I'd have another one somewhere else. I'd had half pints. I was all about the half pints. And I've been drinking half pints all day long. I don't know how much I drank at this point. And it was about 8 o'clock, and these guys were like, let's come to my house and go drink. I'm like, yes, finally, someone wants to drink with me. And I go to their house, and we drink, I don't know how much, gin or something. And his roommate comes home, he's like, you guys have to leave. And I kick off, and I hit a fire hydrant, and I broke some ribs, cracked some ribs, punctured my lung. Water shooting everywhere. Got a 0.27 blood alcohol level. They're dragging me out of this Isuzu that my mom had just bought me because she knew I got this girl pregnant, and she was like, I think it was a big experiment. Let's see if Greg is going to fuck shit up again. Which I did. Because what I was, I had a 1978 Dodge van with a shark fin on top, and she didn't think that was good for a baby. You know, it was, and so I got out of the hospital. I woke up in the hospital. And I see this silhouette of this woman with flowing hair and a sweater on, and she looked really clean and, you know, better than anything I'd ever had. Not had, but like, you know, just clean. She looked like an angel to me, and she was talking about recovery. And she suggested that I go down to the end of Maine, to that place, and do a couple sit-down interviews and have them assess me because I had a problem, and I knew I had a problem. And then orderly came in and pulled the tube out of my dick, which was awful. It was like starting a lawnmower. Wow. You know? Whoa! And, you know, unhooked me and let me go home. And, you know, I was home for about 2 days before some detectives showed up at the house because there's a cop that lives next to my parents. And someone lit their cop car on fire, so apparently they thought it was me because I have the exact same kind of gas can in the back of my shitty little Chevy Love that doesn't run. And so I'm going down there and taking lie detector tests, and I failed it twice, and I didn't do it. I swear to God. And I was just like, what is going on here? Like, they're making my chick do a lie detector test, and she was pregnant, and I was just like, what? Just terrible. And so I just figured I'm a natural liar or something. I was suggested I go to Pine Recovery. By this point, I'd gotten a job at Waterman's. I was making decent money, and things started looking good for me because for some reason I've been blessed my entire life. My entire life I've gotten blessing after blessing after blessing, and I thought it was all me. And I was going to do right. I wasn't going to drink anymore. I just smashed myself up again. And I just had it under control, and I started going to New Heights instead. I was like, I don't need to go to Pine. And I went to New Heights, and I was doing pretty well in the program, and I met some guy over there, and he introduced me to Clare County Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I went over to the meeting, and there was people my age and younger that were alcoholic, and that were struggling with this shit, and they weren't all happy and go lucky, and they were going through it, and they were talking about feelings, and I was like, what? And then my counselor at New High suggested I get a sponsor, and I asked a guy to be my sponsor, and then 2 days later I went to jail, because I had to go to court, and I was in jail. I went to court for the first time here in Tulare County. I've been to court so many times in San Luis Obispo. I've been arrested 19 times. And I went to court for the first time, and I met the Honorable Judge Gorsuch. And he acted like he knew me. And he just threw the thing. He was like, stay off the sauce. What? Did you just see that? And I was like, I thought it looked good. I had a job. I've been doing this outpatient program. I had all these cards filled out. I had references, and he gave me 8 months like it was nothing. And my chick was there. She was like, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm going to jail. You know, and that was the longest stint I'd ever had. And I was in there when my daughter was born. I just reiterated that I was never going to drink again. I was never going to drink again. And I certainly wasn't going to believe in those fucking gut people at AA, you know? And I got out and I didn't drink. And I got us a place to live. And I married her like 3 weeks later. Because, I mean, I was in jail and she kept bringing this little baby. She was visiting with it inside her for a while and then she brought it in her arms. And she let me hold it in my arms and was asleep the whole time. I never saw her awake. And I fell in love with this little girl with her little tiny fingernails. And I just knew I had to be right and I knew I could. I knew somewhere inside I wasn't the scumbag that I betrayed. You know, and I married her, her mother, and got a place to live, got a job back at Waterman's. They hired me back. I stuck her into it. And, you know, a couple months went by, and she wasn't appreciating all my efforts. And I was so angry about that. And we started fighting, and I was kind of going to meetings for a while. And what scared me off was they started talking to me afterwards, which frightened me, because that meant they remembered my name, and they really wanted me to be a part of it. And I wasn't such a good chair stacker back then. I just kind of went in and out. And I got invited to this pool party, and it was at a place, the guy's my sponsor now, which is kind of ironic. And the person who invited me to the pool party is my fiance now. You know, and she was a member of Tiki Paw, and that scared the shit out of me because these people actually wanted me to be a part of something. And I ran, I could do it myself. And it took about 3 months before I started drinking again because, goddamn, I was pissed off enough and I wasn't being appreciated. And then it took about 4 months after that before I started getting arrested again because, you know, the now ex-wife took off to San Luis Obispo on Valentine's Day with her sisters. I went downtown and I was drinking Sailor Jerry's at the house, and that wasn't going to be enough. I knew it wasn't going to be enough. There was about half a bottle left, and I just knew it wasn't going to be enough. And I lived out in the boonies, so I went downtown, and I remember having a really good time at the bar, and I woke up in a holding cell, and then they were dressing me out, and I was like, aren't you going to release me drunk in public? He's like, no, you got battery on a police officer. So I was like, oh, cool, that's where my teeth went. Because my top insurance were gone. And I was just, oh, this is great, you know. But luckily I didn't go see Judge Gorelick. I only did 10 days, but when I got out, my job was gone. I kind of slowly worked my way up, and I was doing a service technician position out in Goshen. And that job was going really well. You know, they appreciated my efforts. They appreciated my skills that I had. And I liked that. But I started drinking while I was working there and then just trashed it. And so I decided to white knuckle it again. And again, I wasn't appreciated. And so I kept trying this and trying this and trying this. I just figured if the people around me would appreciate the fact that I wasn't drinking and I was still an asshole, we'd be fine. You know? And I just wanted pats on the back all the time and fucking cake, pies. I don't know what I wanted. And it was a Thanksgiving, night before Thanksgiving, Julia drank at the house. I've never seen this girl drink. You know, I can think twice that she's ever bought booze. And she was drinking at the house with her sister and her brother-in-law. And I didn't drink that night, but the next day we went to Thanksgiving at my in-law's house. And when we left, I was like, I'm going to go buy some booze. And I bought 2 bottles of vodka, 2 fifths. We went home, played cards. Had a good time, you know, between 4 of us. We were just playing cards, drinking. Then we went to Denny's afterwards, and I ordered a beer, and they looked at me like I was crazy, because it was like 1:30. And the next 3 days, I got drunk, because that night I didn't get drunk. I was totally conscious and fine, and it wasn't enough. And I figured it would be, but for the next day, I was staggering drunk. And I went to work, just... I had a little bit of booze, and I mixed it with something from the vending machine, and I felt better. I felt so much better, and that worked. So I decided to go to the store and go get some more booze on my first break, and that worked even better. I felt really good, man. And then I went to the store again and got another pint. And then on the third break, I went and got a fifth, and I started hitting shit on the forklift, and he sent me home. And I was screaming, woo, you know. just fucking going out in style. And this was a job that I really appreciated. I really liked it. And they appreciated me. In 9 months, they jumped me up $5. You know, they were moving me around and getting me where I wanted to be. And I was earning more money than I'd ever earned in my life. And I showed up drunk and fucked it up. And then I got written up and I said, okay, I won't do it again, but I couldn't stop drinking at that point. And that was Thanksgiving. Easter, I got arrested next door to my house. There was a cannabis club. I lived in between the titty bar and the cannabis club. You know, and I've been drinking and just partying in my... I had this old Falcon sitting in the front yard. Drinking all day in the Falcon. Pretending to work on it. You know, I'll clean it. Drinking, and next door beating on the cannabis club, and they wouldn't let me in. You know, and a cop pulls up and arrests me, and my daughter saw me get arrested that time, and she was just in tears, crying her eyes out. And you know, it was a bad scene. When I got out of jail after that drunken public, I continued. I just wanted to fucking die. I wanted to kill myself via alcohol. And I drank until I make stuff at the house. I make barbecues and do all this stuff. And metalwork and alcohol don't really mix, especially when you're drinking that heavily. And I started hurting myself. I started cutting myself and gouging myself. I had these big scars. And I was just getting trashed, all down drunk. And there was no in my head, no limit. And I didn't know what to do, and I was crawling on the ground saying, please help me. And my wife at that time didn't know what to do with me. And I felt disassociated with the world. You know, I felt like I was on a lonely planet. And I think God was putting things in my life. I didn't want to drink for the Sunday, didn't want to drink at all. And then finally I was like, I'm going to walk down to the store, which is Casablanca, you know, from... like a mile and a half away. And I'm walking down there, and then my pop shows up, or my mom shows up, coming from church. Where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to the auto parts store. So she's like, our dad will give you a ride. I'm like, great. It's awesome. So he gives me a ride to the auto parts store back home. And so I had to walk back down the store because I had to get some booze. And I was pissed at myself. And this, I mean, it was an opportunity not to go to the store, but that was already not an option for me that day. You know, I was having problems, relationship problems due to my alcohol and my alcoholism, and due to my lack of giving a shit about, you know. I mean, I used to push a shopping cart. I support you. You know? What do you want from me? You know, I bought this fridge. You know? When I threw a coffee table through the sliding glass door, I put a board up. What now? You know? And then I'd be working in the garage till like 10 at night, and I'd come in, and she'd be like under a lamp painting a model. I'm like, what are you doing? And I started getting resentments against her, and then came to life that the marriage was shaky on all grounds, I'll just say. And, you know, I just started blaming fueled my alcohol. I love blaming people. It got me to where I need to be. It got me to that point of not giving a shit, you know. And I blacked out drunk. You know, I was cleaning my garage. I was drinking. She went to the store, just like the second time I seen her buy alcohol. She was trying to apologize to me, I guess, because I was really mad at her, because I know she went somewhere the night before. And I remember drinking, and then I woke up, my boxers in the front yard, you know, and I'm like, what the fuck? And the cop was like, shut the hell up, or you're going to jail in your underwear. And I was all, what the hell? And my mother-in-law was coming out crying with a pair of shorts, like, you know, I mean, Open the white trash. If you haven't been arrested in your no shirt and it's just in your underwear, you just haven't been arrested before. And I get to jail. You know, it kind of sobers you up. You know that sinking feeling when you know you're going to jail? It kind of sobers you up. You know, I go to the bird cages over there by Celia, and the first thing I do is call the wife. And she says hello. I remember her voice, crystal clear. It was afraid. And it was hello. And I said, hey, what's going on? Bam. And then, oh. So I call again, and the cop behind the desk is like, you better not be calling your wife. Why not? You're in here on a felony domestic. And, everything just stopped, you know? For so long I had, this huge noise in my head, this huge war, all this static just happening. I was trying to drink away, and I was trying to move faster. And, you know, it's like I jumped on a freight train that we could never go fast enough. I heard someone say that up here, so I'm stealing that. That one's mine now. Because I relate to that very dearly. And something stopped for me, and I knew what I had to do, you know, because I was going to die. I was on my way to death and loneliness and just discard. You know, I was never going to see my daughter again, and I went, they put me in jail, they gave me, six months, I wound up doing four of it. I got all these restraining orders, you know, can't go near my house, I can't go near the wife, I can't go near the mother-in-law, I can't go near my daughter, I can't send her letters, I can't send someone a letter to send someone a letter to send someone a letter. It's like three parties out. I couldn't go near my dog, which I don't know if you know me, but I like my dog a lot, and my dog likes me, but I got a restraining order from my dog, and that hurt, and I got a restraining order from her dog, which I didn't care about. But I thought that was kind of rude, you know, follow a restraining order, but don't dog. And I was just going through all, I was sitting there over at pretrial when I got all the paperwork, and I was just like, wow, you know? Everything had to change. My life was not going, but the way I wanted my life to go just wasn't working, you know? I had this plan, and I was going to do it my way, and I was going to make the world happen the way I needed it to, and all the way around me, and if that meant being a drunk ass, stomping through shit, that was what was going to happen. And it just wasn't working anymore. I got to a point where I just knew it wasn't working anymore. And I've never been to that point. And I got transferred over to MCF, and some dude came through with a little bag. And I knew he was going to do a meeting. I was all cool. So I'm, hey, then, no, I ain't going. You want to know? You know, he went around the unit and stopped in the middle where the desk is, and he was talking to the guy, and I beelined over there, and I was like, hey, we're going to do a meeting? He's like, no, I'm already calling to get out. No one here is an alcoholic, which is surprising. But I was like, I'm an alcoholic, man. And he started throwing me all these books, and a lot of them I still have today, you know, and I still read out of. I got my big book. I got my little big book. I got my 12 and 12. I got my Living Sober, and didn't read that one too much. It's weird. But I read the shit out of that big book, and I read it four times before I left, and I underlined a lot of stuff, and I talked to a few guys that had come into the unit about recovery, and when I got out, I ran back to my Tukey Paw, because there was people there that gave a shit, and that, you know, I don't know, it finally gotten to a point, and it took years of coming and dodging and whatever with meetings and messing around and getting to know people and not wanting to be around, and I finally just knew I'd be home, and I went there and I was welcomed back with open arms, and they've been nothing but kind to me, and I've tried to pitch in and stack some chairs, make some coffee. You know, they talked me into going to a business meeting. I've never been to a business meeting because I didn't really care what went on. And I went to my first business meeting and I made you secretary. I was, oh, yeah, that's weird. I don't know what a secretary does. You know, I don't write things down. And I don't know, it's been an experience that's really helps guide my recovery. You know, I would highly suggest finding a service position and getting into it. And I don't know, it's helped me. You know, my end of it's been great. And if nothing else, it's gotten me to a meeting every week. Because, you know, it's like you get out of jail, you don't have nothing going on. You go on 15 meetings a week. Who the fuck needs a higher power when you go on 15 meetings a week? You know, you get a job, you get some health back, you get a check, you start getting your kid back. You're not able to go to as many meetings, you know, and that's when you really start looking for this higher power. And if, I mean, I'm not going to sit there and say that all the slogans work, you know, the 90-90, this and that, but they help. You know, because if you haven't met someone that's willing to talk to you in 90 days after 90 meetings, then something's going on. You know, someone's going to want to approach you and talk to you. You know, we're all coffeeed up, ready to help. You know, Alan, he was the secretary for CPPA. He's a good guy, and me and him were talking about doing something, and he was like, "Here, let me give you my number," or I was giving him my number, and then Hillary came up beside me, and she thought, "What's that number?" And I was like, "Oh, cool," you know. And I didn't even know her name at this point because I'd seen her around, but I'm not a skirt chaser. I was married, and I know my limitations. And then you know, we went out to coffee, and we really hit it off. And all at the same time, my dad's in the program. He's been in the program forever. He's in the Navy with some old goat named Bo. And I always liked Bo. And I started hanging out with him. And then I had this Schwinn with a two-stroke engine on it. You know, that's all I could get going. And some people I know, they gave me they didn't give me a shellhead, but they gave me a motorcycle on payments with no interest, right? Because he's like, "I see something different with you," you know. And these were people not in the program, you know. It started happening throughout my whole life, and then I started hanging out with the sober riders, and that gave me another sense of accountability. I started dating that girl in the program, and that gave me another sense of accountability. I started sharing that meeting, that gave me another sense of accountability. My father's in the program, that gives me some sort of sense of accountability, because he, you know, when I was 15, at that point, he hadn't gone to meetings for a while, and I thought he was a prick, you know. And then my addiction kicked off, and he started going to meetings again, and I have seen a change in him. And it just goes to show that this program can work for anyone at any time. When they say the most important person in the room is the alcoholic still suffering, they're not talking about the newcomer. They fit right in there, but there's also people with years that suffer in this program, and this program can work for them too. And that is amazing to me. You know, that gives me hope for the future, and that makes this journey endless to me. So, you know, it helps. Within 6 months, I got my daughter back. I got full custody of my daughter. Which was amazing. I should have probably never seen her again. If I would have started drinking again, I never would have seen her again. And that's meant so much to me, because that little girl means the world to me. When I got out, the first thing I did was I filed divorce papers, because I realized I had no right fucking around with my child's mother, you know, because she's going to be my child's mother for the rest of her life, for the rest of my life, and I need to get along with her. And so me trying to force some romantic entanglement with her is ridiculous, you know. And she's moved on. She's remarried. She remarried before I did. And I've had dinner with her and her husband and my chick, and we've come to terms and agreements, and we tell each other the truth today. You know, we can explain to each other what we expect in the raising of our kids, which was something that we couldn't do before, you know. And that too, I can say, has been a part of this program, you know, something that a fruit off the tree of AA or whatever, you know. I go to couples counseling, and that has helped me communicate with my chick, and which is good, because she likes to communicate. And I do not, you know. She enjoys communication. know, that's something new for me, and I wouldn't have been willing to do that. You know, the willingness to do this program and to try something new has spread out through my life like a virus, and I've been taken over by it, and I don't want to stop, you know? When I get asked to do something, I do my best to do it, you know? I work hard at work, and I keep that separate from what I do on the side now. Because my side work is really important to me, too, because I don't know what people would do if they... I mean, myself, I have to have something that I can control, and I can control a little piece of metal, and I can hopefully get the outcome. I can see a start, middle, and finish to it, and then I can move on. And then that maybe that will grow into something else in my life, you know? Because if you feel like you have absolutely no control over anything and everything's hopeless and useless, then it's crazy, you know? When I did my fifth step, I tore apart a mini bike. That was my meditation time. You know, I sat there and... Because I can think. I'm a welder. I like having my hood on because I can sit there and think. So, I don't know. Come to Tukey Claw. We're on the corner of church and school, and we meet every Saturday night. And we could use all the support if you want to see some young people in Alcoholics Anonymous, if that's the place to be. There's men, women, children there. And my dog.